First up, we are going to hear some stuff from the BAE Systems protest that went down this afternoon.
Okay, so could you tell me what you've been doing today?
We're here with the Stop G8, Disarm Dicey and Smash EDO protesters and their friends. We're here to say no to the arms dealers in central London. So what we've done is we've visited half a dozen of the offices of the different companies. And what we tried to do is stand outside and make people aware that these companies are in London, because they're always behind a really hidden facade, you know, and actually tell the arms companies they need to pack up and leave. And so that's why we've been here. I've been dressed as Death. There have been about a dozen of us, also all dressed as Death. And from Death's perspective, you know, arms companies are still bad news because they just increase our work. So that's the other thing we're trying to say. Okay.
How many arms companies have you visited today?
I think it's about half a dozen. So, yeah, BAE Systems, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and so, yeah, so there's quite a few of them in the middle of town.
Great. Thanks very much. I think that's all.
Well, thank you.
Radio broadcasting live from the week of action against the G8. I am speaking to an almost international who came to join us here in London. Where have you travelled from to come here?
Almost international is quite right. I'm from Edinburgh up in Scotland. So yeah, almost international. We haven't got our independence quite yet, give it a few years. And well, I'm here down at the G8 because, the protest against it rather, because G8 is really central to everything that's wrong with the world at the minute. Capitalism, environmental destruction, poverty, national self-interest, well, more like state self-interest, really. And the G8 is when leaders of the major countries in the world, superpowers really, come together and essentially discuss how to screw everyone else over. And that is something really important to be protesting against, and definitely worth the 12-hour coach journey down from Edinburgh for it.
And how was yesterday for you?
It involved a lot of running around. I only got there just as the convergence centre was evicted, so I kind of missed most of what was happening there. But I don't think the day was very successful overall. It involved just a lot of running around, as far as I could see. But in a sense, it does show a lot about where we need to go in terms of our tactics and strategies as well, and how we respond to this. Do we want to spend the rest of the week trying to outmaneuver the police, or do we want to do something more targeted at the centres of global capitalism?
So tomorrow is an action planned with the ABC and No Borders. Do you have some feelings or wishes or something you want to say about hopes and expectations for tomorrow?
Well, I'm an internationalist. I don't believe that borders are necessary or desirable whatsoever. It's another excuse, really, for the state to employ armed people to stop people choosing where they want to live. I think the right, choosing where you want to live, whatever country you want to live in, should be up to you as an individual. And this whole state apparatus that every state has, really, to control its borders is utterly ridiculous and, as I said, unnecessary. I think that if we look at the what globalization has led to, capital, and you know, finance capital particularly, has been able to circulate and invest wherever, outsource labor to wherever as well. But people aren't allowed to move on that freely. This globalization, the way it's been carried out, has been to it's basically been for the benefit, the sole benefit of the bosses and governments.
Cool. So let's hope that tomorrow's action at least will be something like a brink of hope.
I hope so.
For this internationalist dream.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is Rise Up Radio, broadcasting live from the Week of Action Against the AIDS. We're near Vauxhall Tube Station and we're speaking to Mark, who hasn't been involved with the Week of Action Against the AIDS. Mark, what do you think about the protest?
What protest?
You haven't heard of the protest against the AIDS?
And not until you arrived, no. There's been hardly anything about it in the news.
Well, what do you think about the G8 itself? Do you think it would make sense to protest against the fact that the 8 most powerful countries are coming together to take decisions that concern the whole world?
Well, those countries have been making those decisions in our absence throughout the course of the last few months and years, and they're merely coming together now to sign the documentations, to pat each other on the back, to have nice dinners, and to consolidate those positions. So the actual meeting of the G8, I don't believe, serves any function other than to ratify decisions that have already been made.
To contest these decisions, do you think it makes sense to protest in the streets?
It makes sense to protest in the streets, yes. I guess it does. It makes more sense to protest in the longer term and to engage in a much more long-term movement and opposition to the work that's being conducted by them as they conduct that work. So protesting in the streets is our right as free citizens within a democratic state, and it's our what's the word I'm looking for?
We can add
yeah, obviously. Everything. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I believe it's imperative for people to actually exercise that right and to voice their opinions and to try to bring to the attention of the broader public these particular and specific meetings of this 8 powers. But whether it serves any useful function other than highlighting awareness of those issues, I don't know. The state takes great care to suppress broadcast of said event. It takes great care to disrupt those protests in the street. It engineers those particular protests to convert them from peaceful, free, libertarian protests into what the state and the press will then deem as disorderly riots, and it does that by injecting police and injecting the state's troops into those conditions to actually disrupt them, and then turns the story around to make it feel like, or make it appear as though they were always going to be antagonistic, violent, disruptive demonstrations. So I think it's valid that people try and express those opinions, but I think it's infinitely futile, because those demonstrations will then be used against the very people that are demonstrating as a weapon to demonstrate to the broader public that these people are antagonists, are anarchists, and are disruptive, and as such their opinions and their points of view can be discredited. So it's useful, yes, in getting the word out, but I also think it is largely self-defeating, because those groups of people that do demonstrate make themselves targets and turn themselves into the potential for the state to use them as negative media against precisely the objectives they're trying to propose and trying to disseminate to the wider public.
Well, the state apparently didn't manage to use these people who protest as negative media for your personal opinion, because you don't sound that negative. Do you think many people think like you?
Many people think like me. Well, I don't watch television, so I don't have access to that media. I don't read newspapers, so I don't have access to that media. I tend to get most of my information online and through conversation and through other sources. So I'm not party to the political persuasions of the media in the dissemination of those stories. However, I would perceive that these stories are being reported in the mainstream press to the greater public in much the fashion as I've described they possibly are, and that many people will accept that as the truth and as the word, and will not sympathise with the demonstrators and will see them purely as disruptive influencers and as anarchists. And I'm quite sure that all of the pictures on the television, none of which I've seen, will show black-clad, balaclavaed anarchists fighting with police and police dragging people off to riot vans, and it'll mention the number of arrests that were made and how many of those arrests were for public order offences, blah, blah, blah. And it won't actually focus on any of the agendas. And it will say, a number of people gathered to demonstrate against blah, and this is the damage they caused, and this is how many arrests were made, and here are some pictures of those arrests being made, and here's some pictures of some ugly-looking, blacked-out individuals fighting with nice, burly, clean policemen, and the cost to the public purse was X, and the effect is Y, and isn't this all really bad news? And at no point during these broadcasts, mainstream broadcasts, will the actual message of what those demonstrators are trying to get across be broadcast to the wider public, which is why I feel that the demonstrators are making themselves targets to be used by the state to further the state's message, whilst their own message is either diluted or completely obfuscated.
Thank you very much for these sharing these thoughts. I think it's really important to ask what people think who are not directly participating in the Week of Action Against the Stop G8.
bit who you are?
Yes, my name is Derek, and I just came for the anti-G8 convergence from Frankfurt, where we had a week of action just a week before for Black Occupy against austerity measures as well. And I was really not just excited, but really full of amazing energy of having been the part of the Convergence Center, which in effect was an amazing oasis of creativity, poetry, music, place when the same structures are disintegrating mainstream society, we have no other choice but to create ourselves. And I just find this total clash, this total destruction, this total assault on those very same structures to be really disturbing, when at the same time we're being dismissed as being the violent part of the society. It's the violent forces that are attacking us.
So you came to London, you're at the Convergence Center. Can you briefly describe the Convergence Center?
Yes, the Convergence Center was a six-story building, totally abandoned for the last couple of years in the heart of London, a couple of blocks away from Piccadilly Circus, you know, surrounded by a ton of corporate offices and headquarters, and also a sort of interesting sort of kind of neural point for the culture of the city as well, bringing a lot of musicians and a lot of activists together, and also addressing a lot of the social issues as well, like of housing, you know, being actually pushed out of public spaces everywhere else. In a way, it was to me, it was, and to many others, it was an oasis of sanity in a sea of consumption and destruction that rages around.
So can you tell us what happened actually what you were doing in the space, and can you kind of lead us through what actually happened on that day?
Yes, I was helping out with a variety of different projects that were happening. You know, everything from maintenance to clean up to securing the place, to doing safety watches as well on the rooftop and down below to keep the place safe and secure. And was also in the process of putting together like a reading corner, but since the place was so hectic and in such a short time span, that was a little more difficult. And on the day of actions, when the raid happened, that was our first day of action. There was a lot of just energy the day before, and it was sort of kind of like the ultimate element of not just surprise, but an element of distraction and detraction from what was really powerful and what was happening on the outside.
So how did you find out about the raid? How did you feel it was happening? Where were you when it started?
Well, I was on the rooftop, and having done part of the watch, I was basically sleeping a little late, and I was actually sleeping in a structure that was right on top of the roof. It contained a water tank, and as I was waking up, a ladder dropped outside of the door of the space, and police started sliding down with lots of rocket, and there were yells and screams all throughout the roof. There were still a couple people left on the roof, basically police on the roof, and the ladder was actually outside of the door of the structure where I was in, so like my escape path was actually cut off. And I decided to, you know, just basically lay low and ascertain the situation for a while, and this turned into basically being there for 4 hours and being surrounded by police and deploying on the roof and setting down ropes and bringing in riot gear police also from the structure next door. And it was really an insight of how this is done and what the dynamic of such a situation is, because I was having overheard the conversations, you know, even knowing and having experienced this before, I was, you know, totally amazed by I was listening to conversations of how, you know, like seeing everything down below, how this is a good vantage point to shoot down the occupies, you know, listening to them describing the ensuing smash and grab tactics that are usually used for basically, you know, theft of like basically jewelry by criminals. And it really felt like it was a really high criminal operation using a lot of violence, so kind of a reversal of the paradigm that paradigms that are used in mainstream media and mainstream society.
So did you feel the police were kind of revealing who they really were while you were sitting in this water tower?
Yes, and I also felt like instead of being like, you know, being out there and doing something, instead I was in them sort of kind of like a sort of a more of an observer mode, because very often when demos where we really have this strong instincts and impulse to just announce our presence, and it was really interesting for me to experience actually another side of this interaction as well.
So what happened then?
What happened then? There was a megaphone that I had in that same structure, and I had this idea of when I started hearing the cells and a lot of violence going down, smashing down below, I had this idea of running across the rooftop, and there was a lower ledge, a floor down below, and with a scaffolding right next to it, so I thought I might as well run across the roof and jump down on the ledge below and then cross over to the scaffolding and climb the scaffolding with a megaphone and, you know, offer like an alternative voice in the situation. And I had a limited vantage point from the shed I had. There was one hole on one side and a little crack in the wall, so I wasn't really aware of the total like presence that were actually right outside the door too. When I ran out, there were the police officers in riot gear were in this small enclosure that had railing, since they were not allowed by safety measures, I guess, to be close to the roof. But all around the roof were actually tactical teams with ropes already deployed and dropped down. And it was like basically every couple, two, 3 meters, there was one of them. So I just found the only part of the roof where there weren't there, and I just basically tried to like sneak across in between the police and the ledge basically. And I found myself at one point like hanging off to the chimney with a drop on one side. And then I made a run for it. And as I was running in between the tactical SWAT team officers, you know, climbing gear, one of them reached out, and they were actually tied in with ropes so they couldn't like reach out too far and grab me. But one of them basically reached out and smacked me right in the face, and then grabbed me from behind. And at that point, they started jumping on top of me and mashing my face into the roof. And pretty soon there was about 5-6 officers pretty much on top of me all around. And it was really fascinating that at that point, being so close to the edge, they were not concerned about any safety issues whatsoever, but their main concern was the location and the viewing point of a media camera on one of the surrounding roofs. And this is something that came up. There was one officer that kept reminding all the officers, and to a certain degree that might have saved me from, you know, from even more injuries, and at the same time made me realize that how important it is to have media and witness presence in situations like this.
So you're in no way trying to commit suicide?
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. I was seeking freedom, and I was running for basically, you know, escaping the situation.
So can you just tell us your plan again? So you're
going
to come out of the...
In matter of fact, it was not an intentional act to escape from the police, but it was also an act of feeling really in danger, realizing and feeling the dynamic that was happening, and a lot of people being, you know, it was like a survival instinct more than anything else.
So can you just tell us again about coming out of the tower? So just go through it again, just really step by step, and tell us your motivation at each stage.
The motivation was, it was less of a motivation, like I said, and more of an instinct, basically. It was just feeling totally enclosed and surrounded in lots of ways, and also feeling that so much was happening on the outside that I needed to be part of, and that I just couldn't lay low, and I just couldn't wait. You know, I kept thinking those two options of just wait, laying low till basically, it's all over, and then, you know, escaping. Maybe even waiting for a nightfall, but at the same time it was demos, it was everybody else, you know, being besieged and attacked down below. And I felt like, you know, it was a conscious act to divert a lot of the energy that was being used to basically attack and violate others, my comrades, to basically by putting myself out there. And so I was held down for like 45 minutes. I found myself in this big pool of blood, my face right next to it, And then I knew that something was happening when they're really concerned about washing my face off. It was also, once again, about sort of kind of maintaining a certain image as I was about to be carried out. And what happened, they started pouring fizzy water on my face, but my face was actually held back at the same time. And they started pouring it up my nose. So it was like literally sort of kind of like miniature waterboarding. Exactly. My passages were told there was water on my face, there was water in my nose. And then to clear my nasal passages, I started breathing into my nose, and there was so much blood that the blood started splattering on the police officers, and they were like, oh no, you know, it's like, you know. And while at the same time, any type of freedom and freedom of expression is being assaulted, it's like, you know, having to stay on their uniforms, that's of their own making, is once again one of the biggest concerns. And I was loaded on this not a stretcher, but it's basically this all-encompassing not a stretcher, but really like a cocoon that's used for lowering people up and down, and carried up onto the roof next door from which they came down. It was very surreal to be taken into an office setting and having experienced what I've experienced.
So on the video, you're struggling quite a lot as they're trying to drag you up and in this cocoon, in this kind of straitjacket almost. You're struggling a lot. What were you thinking then?
I was thinking that more officer, with seeing what was, how fucked, for lack of any other words, how really, really fucked up it was, what was happening. That, you know, it's, I have to basically do as much as I can to have as many people present so they can't actually be somewhere else and do even worse things to others.
What happened after that?
They took me to the structure next door, which was also their sort of kind of like a gathering point for the invasion from up above. And it was sort of kind of interesting to see how this corporate setting has been totally commandeered by the police department, and all the people that were actually usually working there were totally on the periphery in the staircases. All the police were utilizing the desks and the whole space. I was really yelling and screaming. It was like catharsis. A lot of the issues that I felt that was really important to broadcast what has happened. And next I was put on an elevator. But when I was put on the elevator in this stretcher, it's possible to actually hold somebody vertically. It was sort of kind of like a mummy sarcophagus almost. But they put me against the wall and they mashed my face, my head, the stretcher. I had no way of actually like resisting this or protecting myself. All my hands were tied and my legs were tied around me, and they just mashed my face against it a couple times, and then they kept pressing. And I just remember as I was taken out, there was like this big blood smear, blood drip on the wall of the elevator itself. And then I was taken out and taken to the hospital and under with two police officers who were trying to be really nice and maintaining over and over that they're there to help me, which I think I've already heard that on the roof already once or twice. And that's the ultimate sarcasm. I felt like it was beyond sarcasm. I felt like it was an act of psychological warfare to actually say something like this after what has taken place. It's like being perpetrator of violence and then like trying to basically, in double speak terms, flip it. And make you believe that, you know, imprisonment is freedom and violence is actually trying to help you. And I think they finally stopped saying that. But the last time I remember them saying that, I just burst out in laughter when they said that they were there to help me.
So the media narrative was all about you committing suicide and the heroic police saving you, and how you were a mad person trying to jump off the building and the police were saving your life. Comment about that?
I think that's very convenient. It also shows how the mainstream media works hand in hand with the police, and how it totally ignores the fact that there was no violence involved from the protesters. There was no plan of violent defense of the building. There was, you know, the talk in the convergent space was of creativity, of music, of creative actions, of bettering the society, of more or less being a canary in the gold mine of ideas, if you will. And
And I think it's also very, very convenient because it also discredits us as activists as being the psychos that are on the ledge of society out there, with the police being the good guys, saving not just us, but also the whole society as a whole from a peril. And it's also very symbolic of peaceful protesters from Funa bombs to critical mass to Occupy being classified as terrorist groups and having really disproportionate military tactics used against them. And in effect, by stating what they stated, they totally ignored that dynamic and that reality. So it's something very superficial, something, once again, with a sort of very double speak.